Welcome to World Anti-Extremism Network's scholarly podcast on ideas for countering extremism and authoritarianism. Faith under totalitarianism. Totalitarianism is a form of government that attempts to assert total control over the lives of its citizens. It is characterized by a strong central rule that seeks to control in direct all aspects of individual life through coercion and repression. It does not permit individual freedom, from the suppression of dissent to the manipulation of truth. Totalitarian governments impose strict limits on freedom, stifling individuality and creativity. This episode explores the intersection of religious belief and oppressive regimes, examining how individuals and communities maintain their faith in the face of systematic suppression. Totalitarian regimes often seek to control or eliminate religious expression, viewing it as a threat to their authority. I am Ahrar Ramispour, and I am pleased to be joined today by Dr. Ali Salmon to discuss the complex and chilling world of totalitarianism, the historical examples of such regimes, and their impact on society. Dr. Ali Salmon is the founding member and chief executive of the Islam and Liberty Network, and the author of the book Islam and Economics, A Primer to Markets, Morality, and Justice. Based in Islamabad, he heads the Policy Research Institute of Market Economy, Prime, which he established in 2013. From 2017 to 2020, he served as chief executive of Malaysia's Ideas Think Tank. An economist and public policy expert, Ali has engaged with the government on issues such as public finance and regional trade. He holds a doctorate in policy research in practice from the University of Bath, and has master's degrees in economics, public policy, and business administration. Ali also writes op-eds on economic topics from the Express Tribune, a partner publication of the New York Times. Welcome, Dr. Ali, to Wayne's podcast. I would like to start with the question of totalitarianism. What is totalitarianism?
Thank you so much, Professor Ahrar, for having me on your podcast. It's a great pleasure to contribute on this important debate. In my view, totalitarianism is a political philosophy or a set of political ideas which has maybe two characteristics. One is that this is a dictatorial form of the government. And secondly, it also brings some kind of utopian or imposes utopian ideals on the society. It emerges from the belief that a society can be controlled from the top, from a central authority, and it usually comes with the feature of single-party rule, which dominates the affairs of society. They also, typically we observe that in such states, in totalitarian states, we observe the expectation that all citizens would be subject to the rule of regime, maybe a single political party, and there will be no competition or no challenge to that authority. And these regimes come with a kind of vision which is imposed from the above and which they expect to impose a certain lifestyle on society as a whole. So in a way, it is a political system evolved from political philosophy over centuries. And we have observed various examples of such regimes in the past.
Thank you, Dr. Ali. How do you think about the difference between a totalitarianism regime or totalitarian regime and also authoritarianism? Is there any difference between two?
I think there are two concepts. There are overlaps. There are similarities between the two concepts. As I said, in the case of totalitarianism, we have a system where a single party is typically ruling, or a regime which is central and top-down. In the authoritarianism, we have observed that even in democracies, which are otherwise, having a plural in nature, and there could be competition of political parties, but there could be, certain leadership which emerges from the competition, from the democratic competition, and they can still exhibit authoritarian tendencies of control, of suppression, of oppression, and of, limiting the choices and limiting the individual freedom. So there are some similarities, but there are also some dissimilarities. In both cases, we see that both systems or both philosophies impose significant challenge for individual freedom and for individual choices.
Thank you, Dr. Ali. It means that in both regimes, there are joint position against freedom and freedom of speech, space for civil society, a space for civic space, political parties. One of the key aspects may be separation of cultural activities or minorities' rights also may be at risk in these kind of regimes. If we go further and describe a little bit about any practical examples of these kind of regimes in our contemporary world, what would be those examples?
It's a complex question. If we go by the textbook definition of totalitarianism, where, let's say, a single party is in control of a country, of a society, and there is no challenge in terms of like organized challenge or organized parties or a civil society, we may not be able to find many examples. According to a recent survey, maybe 4 or 5 countries accurately fit in the definition of such regimes, such as North Korea, Turkmenistan, Afghanistan, and maybe China to some extent, some people or some commentators believe that. However, I think if we look in further, we might find some tendencies of otherwise democratic countries, some tendencies when you mention that cultural identities or individual rights or religious rights of people are subject to violence or subject to control, then this kind of feature may not be occurring only in totalitarian regimes, such as the one I mentioned. They can also occur in otherwise democratic countries. They can also occur in the times of war, conflict, and violence. For example, to give you another example from our recent times, about 15 years ago in Iraq and the neighboring region, we saw the emergence of a so-called Islamic State of Iraq and 11th, ISIS or Daesh. And they imposed or they controlled a significant part of territory, and they announced a government, although that government was not recognized by the international law or by other countries. They imposed, exhibited violence against Yazidi Shias, for instance, and, thousands of people were murdered. And so similarly, we observe these tendencies. If you look at what's happening in Afghanistan after 2021, we have a regime which is controlling women, or which is controlling also the other political parties, or are not there. Civil society is also experiencing difficulties. We also see some tendencies in India, for instance, which is a democracy and a very functioning, I would say, competitive democracy in which there are multiple political parties, multiple regional and ethnic political parties. However, even those democratic governments, or the democratic government has exhibited some tendencies of control of other citizens, particularly Muslims in this case, but also other religious minorities. So I think to answer your question that which examples do we find in contemporary world, we definitely find a few countries which will fit in this definition. But if you expand the idea of control, of subjugation, then probably many other countries can be included in this category as well.
Thank you. Based on what you described about these totalitarian regimes, if you look deeper, we can find there are a large number of authoritarian regimes in the world if you compare with the totalitarian regimes. A few totalitarian, as you mentioned, a few countries, but there are a large number of authoritarian regimes, Islamic and non-Islamic countries. Can you elaborate a little bit on this? For instance, North Korea, for instance, Venezuela, for instance, some monarchies also. These countries, except North Korea, because there is no pluralistic system for the political parties. One communist party leads the entire country, and huge restriction on all aspects of life, including religion, culture, etc. But in some other authoritarian regimes like Venezuela or Islamic Republic of Iran or some monarchies in Arabic states in the Middle East, we can see that there are some sort of freedom, but there are also restriction on freedom on people. If you elaborate a little bit on this.
Yes, absolutely. I think when we talk about authoritarian countries or authoritarianism in general, as I said in the start, there could be otherwise democratic as well as non-democratic countries in which we find similar tendencies. For example, recently, if you look at Malaysia and the reign of Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad, particularly when he was the Prime Minister of Malaysia from 1980 to 2002, almost 22 years. He is considered a Democrat, but he's also considered an authoritarian. He was considered an authoritarian Prime Minister, in which he suppressed political opposition. And he ruled with a sort of an iron hand. However, I think there are also examples where there's also part of the history where he contributed significantly to the country's development. So if you look at South Korea, for instance, President Park in 1960s and early 70s exhibited similar tendencies where authoritarian rule was there, but then also he played a role in the economic development. And also in Indonesia, again back to the Asia region, for a long time, Indonesia was under an authoritarian regime until President Suharto was ousted from power as a result of street protest. And then Indonesia, you know, started a process of political reforms, which continued for many, many years. I think what helped in some cases, and I would mention particularly in Indonesia, was the emergence of civil society, which was parallel to the authoritarian and dictatorial leadership which Indonesia experienced at least for 40 years until Suharto. And what was happening in Indonesia, there was a very strong tradition of religion or faith-inspired civil society movements like Muhammadiyya and Nahdlatul Ulama, which are the largest faith-based organizations in the world. They were established early 20th century, and they were not political organizations, and they are not political organizations even today, but there were certainly political interests or political groups associated with those organizations. I think in that, in the case of Indonesia, I can say that such associations, civil society association, which were inspired by faith, played a very important role in the political evolution of Indonesia post-Suharto. And we see the emergence of a democratic regime, you know, competitive democracy eventually. It's interesting to see, for instance, when the democratic roots are established in the society, you know, even if some political party wants to establish a kind of more control. In this case, there was a very recent example of attempt by President Jokowi, who is the outgoing president, that he wanted to get some concession or some special rule to place his son in the future leadership position. And that constitutional amendment was to be tabled in the parliament, but people came on the street and they blocked the parliament and they blocked that amendment to be tabled. So it was not successful. So I think what we need to see is that if there are authoritarian tendencies or leadership, then how the society can respond and what kind of competitive pressure can be built through the organization of these social relationship.
Thank you, Dr. Ali. You have mentioned very important examples, particularly civil society in Indonesia, Muhammadiyah or Nahdlatul Ulama. Really, they played a very significant role in that society. While in other Islamic societies, we never seen such rule of civil society. Even it's not known for people. There is no space for civil society appearance in most of the Islamic countries. It was quite unique, really. Let's come back to our main topic, which was the faith under totalitarian regimes. And let's see that how have different totalitarian regimes historically approached the suppression of faith and religious practices. Let's discuss this topic too.
Yes, I think this is very important. And I'll just give you another example. For instance, in the case of China, currently the Uyghur Muslims in Xinjiang province, they are under subject to torture. They are subject to religious discrimination. And there is a pressure from the Chinese regime, you know, to curb their religious practices, religious identity. You know, the mosques are not being allowed to be operated. Any outward practice of religion or faith, in this case of Islam, is stopped or prohibited by the authorities in China. So that certainly, I think, creates discontent in society. And that is not very helpful for even the economic inclusion or economic development of that society. We also see the example of, as I mentioned briefly, in the case of Daesh, they actually engaged in an act of genocide against the minorities, Shias, in that region. And that was quite brutal regime, as you may remember, in the name of Islam, unfortunately, which of course had nothing to do with the ideas and values of Islam, but it was presented that way. And I think similar examples where the occupation movement or occupation struggle in Palestine, there we also see a lot of violence in the name of religion or in the name of particular religious histories. So we see these examples ongoing in the contemporary world. And certainly we need to, you know, raise more awareness and the importance of religious freedom, importance of religious and importance of, belief and freedom of religions, belief and practices.
Thank you, Dr. Ali. Do you think that suppression of religious groups, it is helping the totalitarian regimes to maintain their regimes for longer time, or a peaceful coexistence of religious communities, religious people with the regime, with the government system, it will help for a peaceful coexistence of communities in a state?
Certainly, I think when these religious groups or religious identities are suppressed and are controlled, maybe various reactions. So, for instance, I mentioned Uyghur community in China. They also have exhibited Sufi tendencies, which means that they may not be able to, they may not opt to maintain an external religious identity, but they keep a sort of a belief inside them and internalize the belief system. And this happens when there is a lot of violence and when there is a lot of control. So certainly a good idea, we will have a better world in which we have the freedom and we have coexistence of different religious groups and religious identities. But I must also say that in some cases in Muslim societies, including in Pakistan, for instance, which is a democracy in which there is a functioning parliament, we have seen examples of parliament, a majority rule, which has outlawed certain religious beliefs, certain religious groups or communities based on their beliefs or based on the belief that the majority considered, you know, belief of a community as deviation from the mainstream belief system. So in that case, we see that while there is democracy, it can still happen. It can still lead to, you know, exclusion on the basis of religious beliefs. It can lead to violence on the basis of religious beliefs. So all of these problems can still occur. So that's why in my initial remarks, I said that while the textbook definition of totalitarianism and authoritarianism, we may not be able to see across in many countries, but we see these tendencies even in the name of democracies, which we need to, I think, discuss.
Thank you so much, Dr. Ali, for joining us in this podcast. I think you have raised very key points. We started from totalitarian, and also we focused on practical examples of those regimes that are suppressing freedom in religious communities. It was very nice that we have this discussion. I hope our audiences also benefit from your thoughts. Thank you so much for joining us. We hope to see you again soon.